Okay, so this is literally lit. This great is name. Thank you. I named it myself.
Yes, you did.
This is a podcast type situation. It's one of those newfangled podcasts.
Yeah, everyone's doing one, so we thought, why not?
Brayden and I are going to just sit down and talk about different books that have been or are important to us in different ways, or books that we honestly really just don't like. We think they're kind of trash.
We got something to say.
We got some books to talk about. But today we're starting on a high note, a book that
probably the most important book in your life.
Yes.
If not mine as well.
Yes. A book that we both love. This is actually the book that I learned to read on, funny enough. But before we get into that, let's just do a quick introduction. I'm Shauna. Brayden over here.
This is Brayden.
We are brother and sister who have spent our whole life reading the same books and giving each other book recommendations. Also sitting here with us is Brayden's one-year-old daughter, Tessa,
who she demanded to be held. So
she just wanted to snuggle her dad. Who can fault that?
She's going
to
hang out with us, but don't worry. She's going to be mostly quiet while she plays with the tools.
She's never read this book, so we'll see what she has to say.
She's one. She hasn't read a lot of books.
Yeah.
It's mostly just the Eight Little Monkeys.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's mostly just pictures.
Mostly just pictures. And even that, she's like, I'm bored, like a page in.
I mean, I was that way until I was like six, so who can blame?
It's true.
So back to the book at hand. Today we are talking about the book that, I learned to read on, a book that has been very prominent in our family our whole lives.
Yeah.
The first in a series. I'm sure anyone who knows us has already guessed what book that is, and that is the first Harry Potter book.
It's Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or Philosopher's Stone, if you're British, like our grandmother.
Well, is she British?
She was born in Britain.
Or is she Irish?
She's legally Irish.
It's debatable.
She was born and raised in Britain.
Next week on Debatable. Just kidding. Debatable. That's not our show.
That would be a great show. I feel like it's a BuzzFeed show.
Should have thought of that, honestly.
When you go work for BuzzFeed, you tell them that.
Okay. So, let's get into it.
Would you work for BuzzFeed?
You know.
What position, if you had to work for BuzzFeed?
The thing.
Yeah.
I like creating videos like that.
You do. You do that for church.
I don't know that I'm good enough at it to get a job with BuzzFeed.
Now, here's the thing, though.
I would like to be in front of the camera, but when it comes to the editing processes, I can film and I can sit at a table and talk. But when it comes to, the editing, I just don't have enough experience with that to be good at it at this point in my life.
It's fair. Anyway, back to the book.
The book. The first Harry Potter. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. She just put that screwdriver in her mouth and made the funniest face at how it tasted.
She has to learn. Released in 1997.
Yes. No.
Yeah.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tessa, if the microphone sounds weird all of a sudden, it's because Tessa's attempting to knock it down.
Released in 1997, but came into our family home in 2000.
Set in 1991.
Yes. Interestingly enough. So, to start out, we're going to just each...
It may have been released in 98.
Start with our favorite part of the book. Brayden, why don't you go first? What's your favorite part of the book?
Man, there's a lot of great parts of the book. My favorite part of the book is... it's right at the end. It is the potions riddle.
Okay.
When they're going into the secret chamber to the... By the way, there's a lot of secret things in the castle.
Secret chamber.
There's a chamber of secrets. Then there's this secret east wing with all these puzzles.
Yeah.
There's
it's not really a secret. They're just told not to go in there.
It's kind of a secret of what's in there.
But the location itself is not secretive.
That's true. It's just there's a three-headed dog guarding them.
Yeah. But you're right. There are a lot of hiding places in that castle.
Yeah.
Even the underneath the Whomping Willow that has a secret passageway. When the fourth book, when we find out that there's the map, or the third book, when we find out there's the map that shows all these secret hidden chambers and stuff.
And who knows what's under the lake.
Right. There's a lot of secret things in that castle.
Yeah, but they never really named this, but the third floor, west, east wing, whatever.
Yeah.
This might be one of my favorites, and it has all the cool puzzles built by the different teachers. And I like the potions puzzles specifically because it's like Hermione's big moment to shine in the book, where she solves the riddle, which I tried to solve that riddle when I first read the book, and boy, is that hard.
Yeah, you were also 12.
I was 12. Hermione was 11, though.
Well, not all of us can be as smart as Hermione.
For shame.
Shame.
Shame. Shame.
Anyway, yeah, I agree. That's a really good part.
And Harry, like, completely trusts her.
Yeah.
Because she's just like, drink that one and you'll survive. And he's like, I'm just going to trust the 11-year-old who hated me last week.
At that point, you kind of have to. Like,
yeah. Oh, there's fire on
when it's so, like, life and death, you don't have an option.
Right.
Like,
it's also cool that Snape built that whole riddle. Not that I like Snape, but that stop making faces at Tessa.
Keep talking. You don't like Snape. Who does? It's fine.
I think it was really cool that he was able to build that riddle in such a way.
Okay.
My big question is, okay, so did Quirrell got through that room? Did he say that he drank some of the potion, or does he had other ways to get through the fire?
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Me neither. Because, like,
I would like to think that he had to drink some of the potion.
But if that's
but
the
also
case,
if the one vial was one dose.
Or if it wasn't one dose, and if it was like, but there was one dose missing, shouldn't they walk in and be like, well, clearly that's the one we need. All the others are full, and this one's missing.
Unless it was something that, like, it magically refilled itself.
Maybe.
So he drank it, but then all of a sudden there was
a refill. We know that can happen. Also, but, like, imagine if you're Quirrell, and you're like, you know these kids
imagine
are chasing
if you
after
will.
Imagine if you're Quirrell. And you think these kids might be chasing after you? Hey, why don't you move the potion to a different spot so the riddle isn't true anymore?
But if it was magic, then it was automatically
magic.
Refilled.
Sorry, it's Harry Potter. It's all magic.
What?
Automatically refills, automatically puts back in the same spot. I don't know.
These are the deep questions.
Yeah. Maybe Quirrell did just get through without having to drink the potion.
I don't know.
By the way, I like that. I like all those the puzzles they have to solve.
I'm sure probably when Harry faces Quirrell and he's giving the whole, like, you know, villain spiel.
The James Bond villain spiel.
Right. Where he explains exactly how everything occurred to be perfect.
Yeah.
I'm sure he explains it.
I don't remember that, though.
I don't remember it either. That's what we get for not doing our research.
They do say that Quirrell caught the key because the one key is bent. So clearly he's gone through. Did he have to play chess? Well, Tessa, that's not necessary. Did he have to play chess? Did he have to?
I feel like he did.
I don't know. What did he teach? Defense Against the Dark Arts, right? Maybe chess is a dark art. You defend against it.
Maybe that's why the pieces were broken that Ron and Hermione had to stand in for.
Oh, you're right. And if that's the case, and only three pieces were broken, or two pieces, Quirrell is excellent at chess.
Yeah, totally.
No, wait, they weren't broken in the book. They walked off the board when the three of them walked in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to say that it's been a while since Shauna and I have actually read this book. Shauna has read the book, about 1,000 times?
Yeah, pretty close.
I think I've read it twice in my life.
Yeah.
And watched the movie
you
way too many
up.
Times. I'm good, actually. I don't feel the need to reread it.
I know.
You're going to go home and reread it after the show, aren't you?
Yeah,
and listen to our podcast and be very upset about some of the things we said.
The thing about Harry Potter is that if I can use this platform for a minute.
It is your platform. It's your podcast.
The thing about Harry Potter is that I just love it so much. But I've read it a lot.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, if I'm sitting down and I'm like, oh, I really want to read that one part in the sixth book where the one character says this.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that part.
I know the general section of the book to kind of flip to.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to sit there and be like, oh, there's like three parts I want to read, but I don't remember where they are, so I'm going to reread the whole book. Like I do with like other books that I've read.
Right.
But when it comes to Harry Potter, like I know, oh, the troll scene in the first book is halfway through the book, so I'm going to just flip to the middle, and I'll be close.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's within a couple pages. So, like, you know, I'll probably honestly just go home and read that last two or three chapters of the Voldemort defeat and see if we were right or not.
Well, here's hoping we were.
Yeah.
So, Shauna, what was your favorite part of this book?
My favorite part of this book? I would say my favorite part is maybe a tie or twofold, which maybe isn't allowed.
I don't think they wore ties.
They did. It was part of their uniform.
Okay, so you like the ties.
Don't question me.
Now, which tie? Did you like the Gryffindor ties or the Ravenclaw?
Can I answer the question you asked me? You asked me a question, and I'm trying to answer it, and I just get all this garbage.
See, I'm trying to be the funny man.
So, try harder.
Ouch. Give me my coffee back.
My favorite part of this book, my voice went all funny there for a second, is a tie between the scene with the troll, Harry and Ron and Hermione, like, it's kind of the first time they all have to team up together and kind of get along. And it's after Harry and Ron kind of made Hermione feel like trash earlier in the day.
How dare they?
Which we all know is not a difficult feeling for an 11-year-old girl to have, but they got her there pretty darn quick. And so that's one of my favorites, how they had to come together and work together in the bathroom, even after, you know, Hermione was super angry at them and they were really rude to her and really mean to her and about her. But she still was, like, coaching Ron from the corner of the bathroom. Like, switch and flick. Say this. Okay, now we're good. Now you're going to save the day. Cool. Like, she was giving him pointers.
She kind of needed to. Even after. She wanted to live.
Right. But, like, even after him being a jerk to her, she was trying to, like, encourage him. So that's one of my favorite parts. My second, the tie. And I actually just thought of this while we were talking about the end of the book.
Okay.
Was the Mirror of Erised.
Oh, I love the Mirror of
Erised. When Harry finds it and he sees himself surrounded by his whole family. Like, he spent his whole life feeling alone and unwanted. And that's not a feeling that just gets brushed over.
No.
That's something that gets ingrained in your personality.
I always wish and they brought, like, the mirror back in the last book.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, he's standing there in front of this mirror and he sees dozens of people who look like him and who are, like, patting him on the back and supporting him and standing there in solidarity. And obviously he has no idea who any of them are because his aunt and uncle have never explained his genealogy to him.
Right.
But he knows, like, oh, that one has my hair. That one has my eyes. That one has my smile. These are my family. So I think that's probably a tie for my favorite part.
It's such a heart-wrenching scene too. Because it's not, you don't really get this until you read that part, but he's never seen his parents.
Mm-hmm.
He was 2 when they died. He has no memory of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, his aunt and uncle's never going to show him pictures of it. Yeah, I love that part. Although I do have to say, look, there's a lot of great parts in this book series. A lot of amazing world building going on. But the Mirror of Erised, which is just desire spelled backward, kind of one of the weaker points of naming something. It's like, oh, I have this school, Hogwarts. Here's all a bunch of great spells, which is Latin. And then what if I just spell desire backward for this part?
Yeah.
Like, I've invented a new food device.
Yeah.
Which I'm calling the microwave of Ergre, which is just hungry backwards.
Tessa is over in her bucket digging out all of her favorite books. This is hilarious.
What book should we read next, Tessa?
Noah's Ark. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Get me a copy.
So what was your least favorite part?
My least favorite part. Okay.
This silence brought to you by the letter Q.
My least favorite part of this first book is when it's actually the scene that kind of sets up the troll scene when they're all leaving class and Hermione overhears Ron being mean. Like,
it's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
It's almost cliche in my mind to have a young adult book where one of the main characters starts out by being mean to the other main character and then, like, they have some cool bonding moment, and all of a sudden, like, all is forgiven. They're good.
Yeah.
Like, he never apologizes. He never addresses it. she never says, like, you can't say those things about me. They're just like, they fight a troll and they're good. And I don't think that's realistic in honest, like, friendships. I think that if you're going to be friends with someone, like, yeah, you can forgive and get over something like that. But it's gotta be at least mentioned. Like, hey, don't make this joke again, okay? Okay. Yeah. And I also just think, like, I understand they had to set up to have her in the bathroom alone when the troll came in.
Right.
And that was an easy way to do that. But it just feels really cliche.
Yeah, it's... I mean, there is an argument to be made about they're 11, and relationships happen differently when you're 11 than when you're, mm-hmm. you know, however old we are, 47.
But I would argue that when you're 11, you're less likely to be forgiven without talking about it.
I mean, I've never been attacked by a troll.
Right.
So I don't know how I'd feel if I was safe when I was attacked by a troll.
That's fair. But, you know, there are, when I was 11, like, even just certain things that, like, my siblings said to me or the next door neighbors, like,
yeah,
I would cut them out for weeks. And then finally, the only reason I would talk to them again was because, like, mom and dad told me I had to.
I thought you moved out at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're younger than me, but I was like,
don't make that joke again.
I'm sorry. I won't make that joke again.
Hello. And so I just think that, you know, yeah, they're 11. And at some points, they're written to be more emotionally mature than they are,
yeah.
such as the quick forgiveness.
Yeah.
Which I understand, like, she was desperate for friends, and so that probably has some sort of relationship to it. But it feels like a cliche. Like, I'm sure you could pull any YA book off of any shelf and find a moment like that.
And it's important to remember... talking, because I often forget this when I think about this book series, but how much this book series is kind of a first in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying it was the first YA novel ever written, but it's sort of the modern era of YA novels. Hello, Tessa. Mm-hmm. It is very much a first. It's kind of like how the X-Men movies were kind of the first in superhero films of the modern era of superhero films. And now you look back at the first X-Men films and of the first Spider-Man movies, and it's like, oh, every superhero movie nowadays does those exact same things.
Right.
And so I do hesitate a little to call it a cliche. Because to me, it's like, it's not really a cliche. It's like, this is where the cliche came from.
That's fair.
But to be fair, yeah, maybe she did forgive a little too quickly.
Yeah.
For it to be realistic.
It's like reading the book, you read how they're handling certain things, and if you were to just read this book with no previous knowledge and no information, you were just reading the interaction scenes, you would not assume they were 11.
Yeah, it's also important to know that this is a kid's book. Some things are not going to be as well written as other books. Do you remember when Daniel Radcliffe on SNL, he made that comment of, like, anyone who hated the books... they're kids' books. You're reading books for children.
Yeah, they were for children.
Tessa, you can't have my coffee. This is an adult drink.
It's decaf.
No, mine's not.
It's decaf.
Ew, don't give her your coffee.
It's decaf.
Anyway, what was the next thing we want to talk about?
I
said my least favorite part.
Yeah, tell us your least favorite part.
I didn't really like the whole, the duel.
Oh, between Harry and Malfoy?
Well... I would have loved the duel between Harry and Malfoy, but it never happened.
Yeah.
And again, this is just another...
It happened in the second one.
Yeah, that doesn't count. There were teachers there, and they were supposed to be doing that.
There were also snakes there.
One snake.
One snake. Uno snake.
Two snakes if you count Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh snap.
The duel, there's a lot of setup, and then it never happened, and it always upset me. It was like, I want to read this duel.
Yeah. I think it would have been funny if it had been all set up to be a duel, and then, like, you get there and it's like a jump rope competition. You know?
Malfoy's just there on the rope, like, come on, let's do this! Let's do this! Come on!
No, Malfoy's,
50 reps!
Malfoy's the one that's confused because Harry was raised by Muggles.
Malfoy's there with his wand, and Harry comes up, just socks him in the jaw. That's how we deal with things.
That happened in the third one.
That's how we deal with things in London. Where does Harry live?
Surrey.
Where's that?
Not London.
It's pretty close to London. We don't know anything about England. They should rewrite this book to be set in America, and it's like he's from the Bronx.
The thing is that in England...
That's how we do like, things in the Bronx,
in
son!
In England, like... You drive for 45 minutes, you're out of England.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, everywhere is close.
It's not the same in England, because you drive 45 minutes, you're in the ocean.
Yeah, like, everywhere is not like close Spain. To each other. And like, versus like America, you drive for 45 minutes, you're just 45 minutes away from the town.
I could literally drive 45 minutes in a straight line and still be in our town.
Yeah, like, you know, you drive 45 minutes on I-65, you're not even in a town. You're in that weird nowhere land before Indy.
And I so love like, that part, though. There's that one DQ right there.
Yeah, that's true.
The DQ employee there is, like, the worst. I've literally sat at that DQ for 10 minutes at the window.
Why would you drive 45 minutes just to go to DQ?
Well, I didn't. It's just on the way to Dad's.
Well.
Anyway.
You know, but, like, so in England, like, you or I sitting here talking about, like, isn't that close to London? Well, yes, technically. Yes. Because, like, London is 20 minutes away from everything, yeah. You know? Like, you drive an hour, you're in three other countries. Whereas, like, for us, it takes 30 minutes to cross our town.
Yeah.
Like, the other day, I was like, oh, man, I really want Chick-fil-A. Nah, that's a 20-minute drive. I don't got time for that. You know? Like,
so we ordered Grubhub.
So I ordered it to be delivered, because other people have time for that. No. So, you know. It's all relative.
The other funny thing about England is that the way, like, the streets are designed, it could be a 20-minute drive and a quarter mile away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like New York that mm-hmm. way.
Yeah. Probably doesn't help when you're on the left road.
The left side of the road. The left road.
The left road.
The left road.
The road just left.
If you went onto the right road, you'd be there.
The left is just gone, the road.
Yeah.
It just left.
We left it. It's gone.
It just got out of here.
This is what happens when you drive into Scotland. The road left. Sorry, Scotland. We're okay. Irish. I have to make fun of the Scottish. What was the next thing we want to talk about? After our least favorite parts of the books, we want to talk about favorite characters. We're going to talk about all the Harry Potters eventually.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to start with what our favorite characters in the first book were and see how that progresses over time.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. So
there's no choice in the matter.
I'm going to preface this just by saying
yeah.
My favorite characters are different for each book.
Okay.
My favorite character
in is book it just a different Weasley each book?
Well, no.
Because mine is. No.
Not necessarily, but you know, like, my favorite character for book one is not my favorite in book two or book three or book, you know?
Yeah.
But also, like, if you were to ask me, like, favorite character in the series, it would not necessarily be the same as, like, favorite character in this book. Okay?
So who's your favorite character in this book?
So in this book, I think, honestly, my favorite character is I need you to answer this first. I'm still thinking. I was gonna just keep talking until I had an answer, but I need you to answer it first because I'm still debating between two.
So, like, overall in the series, my favorite character is Hagrid.
Okay.
And I think in the first book it's still Hagrid. Mm-hmm. I really first of all, the best entrance
yeah.
of any character in yes. this whole book series. Knock down the door in the middle of a thunderstorm. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. It just picks
that's
it back
how
up.
I want to meet new friends.
Especially 8'6"
yes.
giants.
Yes, let's meet in a thunderstorm after breaking something in the middle of the nowhere. Like, that's what I want.
The middle of the nowhere. And he brings middle, a cake. What's better than...
You have checked all my boxes, sir.
You brought a cake?
It's storming.
You're telling you me I get to leave something? My abusive family?
You yelled at the people who don't like me. You brought me sweets.
You
that's
gave,
all of them.
You gave my evil cousin a pigtail.
That's all of them. That's all I need in a friendship, honestly. Just hate the people I hate.
That's why Harry and Hagrid became such great friends.
I don't hate anybody. Just, I love everybody. But, you know, like, there are some people that you're just like...
There are some people you would give pigtails to.
Oh, it wasn't a sin to be mad right now, you know? Like, you just have those people.
But I do love how Hagrid gets introduced.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a different favorite, like, character moment. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
my favorite moment with the character is when in the after the end battle of Voldemort, Harry's in the hospital and he wakes up and Dumbledore's there.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation he has with Dumbledore. I love that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does give a good introduction to the character of Dumbledore. And looking back after, like, having read the whole series and kind of know what's mm-hmm. really going on with Dumbledore the whole time, it's like it's a shocking moment of kindness from a character who would, let's be honest, not be super kind to Harry.
Yeah.
For the rest of the series.
Yeah. He had high expectations.
He
and
did.
And I think this is just a side note, just a general people note. This is not, there's a lot of life lessons to be learned from this book. One of them is, like, you have to have reasonable expectations.
Yeah.
It's not fair to expect a 17-year-old to destroy the person who wants to end the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair. You have to have reasonable expectations in all relationships for all people. There are times where I'll be frustrated with one of my friends because I'm like, I just want to do it too. And then I'll realize that, like, it's not a fair expectation for them to read my mind.
Yeah.
You know, like, they don't know what I want unless I voice it. And that's also, like, Dumbledore was a little bit shady because he had all these expectations, but he also did not give a ton of information.
And this was a moment where I think he is really starting to question his own plans. Like, he sees this 11-year-old who has miraculously survived this run-in with Voldemort in the hospital. He's hurt. He's survived. And I almost think in this moment, Dumbledore's thinking about throwing it all in.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I can't do this. I have to figure out some other way to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So, Shauna, what was your favorite character?
So, in this specific book, I think my favorite character is Harry, which is cliche. It is expected.
You know what? Pretty much cliche for a reason.
Pretty much everyone will be like, well, duh, it's Harry. It's Harry. Like, boys spent all of his life that he has memory of in a place where he is at least neglected, arguably abused.
Oh, straight up abused.
With people who have made it very obvious they don't like him, they didn't like his parents, they're only keeping him around because of some weird honor need. And he gets to this train station, and right off the bat, this family of strangers helps him.
Mm-hmm.
The mom teaches him how to get on the train. The one son sits with him.
The twins help him
The
load
twins
up.
Are helping him load his stuff and are kind of like picking on him like a big brother would. And so like he went from like 10 years of living in a house with people who don't like him to like within 5 minutes, these people have been more kind to him than his family ever has. And then he gets to Hogwarts and that's like,
this
he gets
is after,
that,
like, a couple weeks of hanging out with Hagrid, the best character ever.
Yeah, he gets that from, like, almost everybody he meets at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be his friend, and, yeah, we come to find out that he comes to find out it's because he's famous.
Well, if the Weasleys
but
didn't
that's
know that
still,
when they met
yeah,
him.
Ron didn't know that.
The twins
didn't know that. His mom didn't know that, and so then he gets to Hogwarts, and, like, he not only gets friends, but he, like, gets the whole school on his side, practically. Like, yeah, there's a few Ogden Slytherins who are angry at him.
Oh, those Slytherins.
But, like, you know, majority of that school just wants to do whatever they can to impress him and be on his team, which is something that, like, he's never had before. But he doesn't let it get to his head. Like, he doesn't get a big ego over it. He's still, like he tells Draco, Malfoy, I can pick the wrong star for myself. I can choose who I want to be friends with myself.
Yeah.
Like, this fancy boy who could have everything and anything he wants, asks him to be friends with him, and he's like, you're kind of a tool. No thanks.
I'm 11 and you're 11, but you're already a tool, dude.
Like, I understand that we're children, but I don't want to be associated with you.
I already don't like it. I know nothing about you except that stupid smile.
Yeah, and, like, you know, like, he's just, at a young age, is filled with a lot of, like, I just want to do what's right.
Yeah.
I just want to do good. You know, when they're at their, like, flying lessons and Malfoy starts picking on Neville Longbottom.
Yeah.
He immediately stands up for this kid, even though, like, they're not necessarily friend level. He doesn't know him.
They're roommates.
He just
so that's
sees. Yeah. He knows of him, but they're not friends yet. He's never met him before this year. He just sees someone treating someone else badly, and he stands up for it.
Yeah.
And that's a theme that carries throughout the whole book and the whole series.
Shout out to Harry for treating other people better than anyone's ever treated him.
That's it.
Except for the nice squib who lives next door.
That's true.
The babysits.
We don't know if she eats a squib yet.
She thinks she eats a squib.
Not in the first book.
No, that's fair. Not in the first book. I forget. I do like, yeah, he never really does let anything go to his head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's that part in the sixth book where he kind of jokes with Hermione. Like, she only wants to date you because she thinks you're the chosen one. I am the chosen
one.
It's
not in the book. It's in the movie.
It should be in the book.
Not in the book.
We're going to talk about the movies, too.
We're not.
We should.
We're not.
We should.
That's your other podcast.
Yeah. Shout out to my other podcast, Netflix, which Shauna will eventually be on to talk about the movies.
Yeah, when you talk about Harry Potter.
When I talk about Harry Potter. I have to talk to my co-host about that.
Well, yeah.
I'm not sure if he's ever seen those movies.
Okay, so that's a personality thing that we got to
fix. That's a personality defect.
That's a personality defect. Anyway.
Do we want to talk about Voldemort as a character?
You know?
No, next question.
No, I don't.
Okay, we don't want to talk about him.
There's not a lot to know about him yet.
No, there's not.
We just, as far as we know in the first book,
He's kind of the perfect first book villain.
Yeah, dude's evil.
That's all we need to know.
Dude killed your parents.
Yeah.
And now, like, he randomly sees you at school 10 years later and tries to kill you. After convincing you, he's not that evil.
I just realized the first Harry Potter book seems like it should. It's like a James Bond for kids.
Yeah.
With magic.
Yeah. So, we don't have a lot about Voldemort to talk about right now.
No.
That will change in future books.
The next book, we get a nice long conversation with his 16-year-old self, which is kind of weird.
The next book is one of my favorites.
They're all one of your favorites.
Well, that's true, but...
Can you rank them for me right now?
Yes.
The seven books.
Yes. I'm going to go favorite to least.
Okay, best from worst.
Best to worst. Favorite.
Yeah.
Absolute favorite. Yeah. Number six.
Okay.
Mainly because Jenny Weasley...
Voldemort.
...is my heart and love.
Fair enough.
And she gets... the most amount of character, like, showcase.
Yeah.
Like, we see her the most, we hear about her the most, we learn about her the most in number six. Close second.
Yeah.
Is the seventh.
Okay.
Because, like, honestly, if you've read Harry Potter, the seventh's not in your top three, you have some issues. Okay. Then third is the second.
Chamber of Secrets.
That's
your third.
That's my third.
That's interesting.
That's my third.
It might be my fifth. I'll do my list after you do yours.
Yeah. I take that back.
No, you don't.
I take it back. Chamber of Secrets is not my third. Order of the Phoenix is my third.
Order of the Phoenix is a good third.
Because, you know...
Sirius
Black.
It's
the most humorous one. It has the most little one-liners.
You know why? It's the one Sirius Black appears in the most.
It's the one that Sirius is in. It's the one that Tonks is in. It's the one where
I love Tonks. It's where we meet Tonks.
They stay in Grimmauld Place for, like, several weeks.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines in this whole series happens in the fifth book. And that is when they overhear some of the adults talking about how they think Harry might be possessed. And then by Voldemort.
Yeah.
And then Harry shuts himself off. And finally, Jenny corners him and is like, "What's up, man?" And he's like, "Well, I was just in, I didn't want to talk to anyone." And she goes, "Well, that's stupid considering I'm the only one you know who's been possessed by Voldemort." And he goes, "I forgot." My favorite line in the whole series is, "Lucky you." But Jenny says back, "I forgot. Lucky you." Favorite in the whole series.
Yeah.
So number five is my thud. Third.
Thud.
Number five is my third. Don't make fun of my voice.
It's called her thud because she dropped the book. Number
five is my third. And then
number
Chamber
four.
Of Secrets.
Okay.
Chamber of Secrets. Also, it's very obvious my top four favorite books are the four that have Jenny in them the most. So, like,
that's fair.
There's no question about how much I love Jenny Weasley.
Almost in decreasing order of how much she's in it. Seven's an outlier because she's not in seven a lot.
I know. But so then Chamber of Secrets
is
my fourth. Fifth would be, fifth is actually kind of like a controversial one.
Okay.
Most people, like, this is their least favorite,
mm-hmm.
okay? And that is Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, I like Prisoner.
It's my favorite.
Yeah.
It just is. And, like, I don't know, I love the whole, like, Ron and Hermione not talking for months on end, the whole, like, going
Doesn't
back
happen
in time.
Book.
That's true. That's
Prisoner of Azkaban is very different from the other books. There's no Voldemort.
There's no Voldemort. It's the only one that doesn't have Voldemort.
It feels much more like a Hardy Boys novel than a sci-fi book.
It is my favorite. Also, the fact that you just called Harry Potter sci-fi.
There's time travel. It's suddenly sci-fi
it's
now.
It's not sci-fi. It's fantasy.
There's a difference between fantasy and sci-fi.
It's not sci-fi.
And time travel is that
it's
difference.
It's not sci-fi. So number three, Prisoner of Azkaban. And then...
Sorry, my daughter just broke her toy to get the ball out of it instead of doing it the right way.
And then my sixth favorite.
Yeah. You're between one and four now.
Is number one.
Okay.
Number four is my least favorite book.
Is it because of Rita Skeeter?
It's a little bit because of Rita Skeeter. It's a little bit because, like, Ron has the stupid petty,
Ron
like,
is the worst in that book.
Which, like...
Ron is PMSing the whole book.
I don't know. Ron is one of my top three favorite characters in the whole series.
Yeah.
And number four, like, a lot of how Ron behaves, I can see myself behaving. And that makes me very angry, and that makes me never want to read that book.
It's understandable.
Because, like...
how Ron behaves.
Yes. And if I can just, for a minute, go off on a soapbox. Every time I have read any Harry Potter book, I relate to Ron Weasley the most.
Yeah.
He is the one out of a million children who just wants to be special.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to be... the best at something for once in his life.
For once in his poor, miserable, hand-me-down life.
He's always just been, you know, he's been hand-me-downs.
Yeah.
He's been Jack of all trades.
There's nothing about him that makes him special from his siblings.
Right, right. There's nothing that individualizes him. Even in the first book, The Sorting Hat, an inanimate object says, oh, another Weasley. Like, he doesn't even get to be his own person.
Another Weasley. Oh, Malfoy recognizes he's a Weasley in 2 seconds.
Right, and that's kind of something that, like,
gingers.
Every time I've read these books, like, he just wants to be special. He just wants to stand out. He just wants one thing in his life that is not because of his siblings. And every time I've read anything about his character that relates to that, I relate to that.
Yeah.
Therefore, like, the books where Ron is the most hothead. I'm talking myself out of number four being my least favorite. I'm going to have to re-identify this list. Next time, I will have an accurate list.
Every episode we do Harry Potter, you're going to do a new list.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to do
I'm
going
to have to reread number four this week, actually.
Okay, well... I'm going to do my list now.
Yeah.
Because four is also my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah, but oddly enough, it has one of my favorite characters, Cedric Diggory.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, one of my favorite characters in the book.
I hate Cedric Diggory.
Really?
I think that's part of why number four is my least favorite. I don't like him.
We'll talk about that more when four comes around.
Okay, that's fine.
Four is one of my favorite movies, though, because Robert Pattinson
we're not talking about the movies.
Amazing as Cedric Diggory.
But we're not talking about the movies.
We're not, but I love Robert Pattinson.
We're talking about the
and
books.
I had to give him a hand out.
Shout out, Grandpa.
Shout out. I'm so tired. So going for my absolute favorite. You know, honestly, Prisoner of Azkaban is probably my favorite.
Really? Okay. It's my favorite movie.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite. It's probably my favorite movie, too.
It is my favorite movie.
I love learning more about Harry's father and the Marauders.
Yes.
The Marauders are the best characters in that.
Yes.
Not the best characters, but it's the most interesting set of characters.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we could know more about them.
I low-key want a Marauders era spinoff.
Yes.
I don't know that it'll ever happen.
I don't think it will ever happen. I don't think it would happen as good as anyone wants it to.
I know.
I mean, well, they just need to take the stag and the doe and make that into a movie. That fan fiction you made me read?
I don't remember that.
That's all about the Marauders.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's about them in school.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, it was that like epically long fan fiction.
Okay.
Yeah, you made me read it when we were in high school. Anyway, my second favorite.
I mean, it seems like something high school may want to have done.
Right?
I just don't remember it. It's been about 8 years.
That's my second favorite. Seven's probably my second favorite as well.
Mm-hmm. Again, like, if you've read all the books and Seven is not in your top three, you have some issues.
Yeah. I love how Seven ends.
Yeah.
This is where, like, talking about the Miraverse set again, the whole conversation with his dead parents.
Yes! I wanted to say that. Okay, so we got to make a note to talk about this in numbers when we get to number seven.
Yeah, lucky number 11.
Because there's a lot of little moments like that in number seven.
Yeah.
Like when they get their watches from Mrs. Weasley.
Yeah.
And she gives him the family heirloom.
Yeah.
Instead of the brand new one. And she gives Ron the brand new one.
Because he's never had anything new in his life.
He's never had anything new in his life.
And
Harry's never had a hand-me-down in his life.
Literally, the only family legacy thing he has is the Invisibility Cloak.
Right. And eventually he has to stop using it.
Yeah.
Yes. We're going to make a note to talk about that when we get to number seven.
But no, the scene in the woods we saw him do everyone after he finds the stone and he brings all the dead people back to life to talk about. I wish that was in the Miraverse set. Like, I wish that's where he had the conversation.
Like, he stumbled upon it when he was looking for the diadem.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. I get it's probably a harder story to make. And I get you have to deal with
maybe I remember this wrong, but I feel like the Mirror of Erised was destroyed.
The Sorcerer's Stone was destroyed. The Mirror of Erised was just re-hidden off of Hogwarts.
That's it.
I think okay. It's in, like, Dumbledore's vault in Diagon Alley or something.
Maybe.
Anyway,
okay, so number three.
So, yeah, my third favorite is probably... It's probably five.
Uh-huh.
Six might be my fourth favorite.
Okay.
Six and two are probably tied for fourth and fifth, kind of.
Yeah.
And it
six
bounced
is
back
the
and
most
forth.
Rom-com of any of them.
It is, and I also...
It's the whole, like, bitterness between Hermione and Ron with the Lavender Brown.
Yeah.
It's the whole, like,
Oh, I
slug
forgot about
club.
Lavender Brown.
Yeah, it's the whole, like, Slug Club
and, slug
and
club.
Ron... Or Hermione asks someone that she knows will make Ron
yeah.
jealous.
I'll put
the
it this
whole,
way.
It's the whole, like, Harry and Jenny junk. Like, six is the most rom-com.
I'll put it this way. I like... Chamber of Secrets better overall.
Mm-hmm.
Six has some of my best favorite moments.
So I would agree with that.
I'm going to put two as my fourth favorite, six as my
mm-hmm.
fifth favorite. I also have the first and the fourth as my bottom two. And I'm going to do the same order you did. First as number six and four as number seven.
I think I need to change my order.
Well, it's too late because we have 10 more minutes of show.
Yeah, I'll readdress it next time.
Anything else we need to talk about? Jess, have you read this book?
I watched some movies.
Anything
nope,
you think we should
count.
Talk about?
Doesn't
quick?
Count. We're not talking about the movies.
Have you? Do you remember that the band Ministry of Magic? They have that bit where
yeah.
they're talking about the books, and the one guy says, "Have you even read the books?" No, but I've watched all the movies, and
yeah.
they're all like, "You're out of band."
Oh, does your
I read the owl?
Oh, Hedwig.
I read that part.
Just Hedwig. What did you say?
Does your order change when talking about the movies versus the books?
Yes, it does.
Because mine does.
You want to do the movies real quick?
I do.
Okay, there's eight movies. So
there
that's
is.
Why my order's changed.
There is. I, for this purpose,
yeah.
seven is one movie.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
So I know it has two parts. I know it's technically two films. For this ranking, it is one.
Okay.
So, talking
yeah.
about the movies, most favorite.
Yeah.
Number three.
Yeah.
Number three. And then number four.
Okay.
Those are some of my two last ones when it comes to the books.
Mm-hmm.
But they're my two yeah. favorite in that order. Then, number two. Then number one.
Okay. So you like the first
number
four.
Two, then number five, then number two, then number one.
Can I ask real quick?
Yeah.
Do you think the films changed a lot when they got the new director in movie three?
I wouldn't know about change a lot. I think more the aesthetic stuff of it
yeah.
changed. I don't think that... The films themselves, like the idea and mentality behind them did.
Because
I think that the films change a lot between four and six.
Well, that's when J.K. Rowling came on as producer.
Well, that's when they veered away from the books the most. Before,
yeah.
up until number four, their whole goal was trying to stay as close to the books as possible.
Yeah.
And then come number six, they're like, nah, we don't care about that anymore. Let's set the burrow on fire. Let's make Jenny have a random shoe tying moment. Like, you
that
know,
was
like,
weird.
It gets a little
the
strange.
The shoe tying moment was weird.
So, three, then four.
Yeah.
Five.
Okay.
Two, then one.
Okay.
The sevens.
Okay. And the six are your least favorite.
Six is my absolute least favorite.
Can I ask why? Is it because they ruined the Jenny storyline?
It's partly because they ruined Jenny.
Yeah.
And partly because... Number six is supposed to be the book where you see arguably the most loyalty out of Ron, period. And that completely gets washed away in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, in number six, he doesn't understand why he's made Hermione upset, but he wants to do everything in his power to fix it.
Yeah, he does.
And, like, he asks Harry multiple times. He tells him, like, you would tell me if you knew, right? Like, I just want to be her friend again. And in the movie, he, like...
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care that he lost Hermione. And he brushes it off as like a like, well,
this happens.
Girls be crazy, I guess. Like, he doesn't care about losing her friendship. He just wants to write away the reasons that he's not wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't like, and that's not the only instance of that, but it's the like most prominent, I think. And so six is my least favorite because I think it just completely butchers the character of Jenny and Ron.
I really feel like Rupert Grint's not in the character as much in that movie.
I don't think they wrote him to be.
Yeah, no.
They
but, you know, like as an actor, I think he almost checked out.
Yeah.
For most of that film. I think it's because he didn't agree much with, but I don't know. I don't. So my film ranking,
mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I think as a movie, and just overall, one is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the, arguably just the best made film. I love the aesthetic. It's the only film that makes me feel the same way as I felt reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Christopher Columbus did a great job with that. Mm-hmm. Then,
you know what else he did a great job with?
Finding America. Right after the Vikings did it 500 years earlier.
Right after the Native Americans did it. He discovered a land that was populated.
You know what else he
did?
No
worries.
Steal the credit for it. Because like one of his ship's first mates actually found it. And
yeah.
Took the credit. Anyway.
Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, the other one. The new one. The nice one. The one who made the Home Alone. So yeah, number one's my favorite. I really love the acting in number three.
Mm-hmm.
From everyone, particularly Gary Oldman. I think Gary Oldman is a welcome addition to this cast.
So Gary Oldman originally did not audition for that part.
No, didn't he audition for Coral? Or am I crazy? Mm-hmm. No, I thought it was Ramis who auditioned for Coral.
No, I think if I'm remembering right, he auditions for Snape.
That's right.
And then they were like, no, but we like you. We'll keep your number on file.
And he was a great series player.
And then they called him in to audition for Lupin.
That's right.
And then they were going to give him the part of Lupin until, I don't remember his name, the guy who plays Lupin.
I have no idea.
Came in to audition and they were like, we're going to flip this. You're going to be Lupin. You're going to be serious. Okay, great. Day's done.
I always found it funny that Gary Oldman loves the book series and had read them, and the guy who plays Ramis had never read a single one before getting the role.
It's like the opposite of the characters.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. Even though they're like 15 years older than they really should be.
Right.
You know what? That's totally fine to me.
Should this podcast just be about Harry Potter?
Maybe it should.
Maybe we don't need other books.
We'll get to that eventually.
We'll discuss it. No. Anyway,
so anyway,
continue
one,
your ranking.
Then three.
I like all of them except the one with spiders.
Jess hates number two. One, three. I really love five. The scene in the Ministry of Magic alone, mm-hmm. makes five my favorite.
The scene in the Ministry of Magic alone,
mm-hmm.
confuses me the most out of everything in that book.
Because it's, why? In the book or the movie?
In the movie.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's because like I was so young when I first watched it.
That's
and
fair.
Then those feelings just continued. But like, it's just like, bam, bam, bam. Things flying off the shelf. Things fighting. All of a sudden, boom, you're all being held at one point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, continue your ranking.
Anyway. I love the fight between Voldemort and Dumbledore in that movie, too. Anyway,
yes.
So one, three, five. Probably the sevens.
Mm-hmm.
Probably two.
Mm-hmm.
Four, and then six is
yeah.
my least favorite.
The six is trash.
Yeah. It kind of is,
The six
though.
Is my absolute favorite book, and my absolute... It's almost personally... offensive
yeah.
how trash the sixth movie was because six was my favorite book.
Yeah. I have to say though, seven is like my, what did I say, fourth favorite or fifth favorite, something
mm-hmm.
like that. I hate the ending.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from Voldemort's death forward,
mm-hmm.
hate it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Which we'll talk more about when we talk about the seventh
yes.
book. Because we have like five more minutes of podcasting
yes.
left. Do you have any final statements you'd like to make about the first book?
You know?
I don't. Can you explain
to me? I don't
think
I do.
Okay.
I don't think I have any more. I think that Harry Potter has been a very important thing in my life and in our family's life.
And in culture in general. Really.
And, like, yes, culturally. Like, I, in my lifetime, have not seen another book that takes on so much cultural shaping as Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there are, you could not count the number of other books and other movies and other, you know, artistic processes that throw reference to Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think almost every other book, every other
yeah.
YA novel I've read since was either trying to be Harry Potter or trying to be the exact opposite of
or
Harry
referencing
Potter.
Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, that's a couple John Green books that we were talking about earlier. There are moments where the character references Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And, like, I really love poetry. And there's a poet that I read who has, like, a whole section of one of her poem books that's about Harry Potter.
And I mean, every book, like, it came out in 10 years after the first one did, was just trying to be the next Harry Potter.
And there's so many, like, fan spinoffs. Like, you know, when we were younger, it was Potter Puppet Pals.
Oh, I love Potter
Ministry
Puppet Pals.
Ministry of Magic. And then recently it's became...
The Harry Potter musical.
The Harry Potter musical. And, you know, there's just so many different, like, fan-created things that are supporting this world that it has become.
Yeah.
It's become one of those things that, like, if you've never watched it or read it or heard of it, you're completely out of the loop.
Yeah. It's like not knowing about the internet.
Yes. Yeah.
That's how big it, like...
Yeah.
Hey, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you put the two Fantastic Beasts films in your counting? Of your ranking of films? Are they both at the bottom?
I have not seen the most recent one.
That's fair. Where would you put the Fantastic Beasts one?
That's an inner conflict for me. Because I like the storyline. I don't support their decision to cast someone who was convicted as a domestic violence perpetrator. And so it's very difficult for me to want to support it.
Very fair.
I don't know. I don't know where I would put it.
At least the first one is only in about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Yeah.
For me, it's actually, it might be number 3 of my favorite films.
Okay.
Because I think Eddie Redmayne is amazing.
I love Eddie Redmayne.
Man.
I love him.
He's a perfect addition to this world.
He could have played every character by himself, and I would watch the movie 12 times.
You know what he should have been? He'd make a great Lupin.
Yep. And he'd be more appropriately aged.
I don't care as much because Gary Oldman and whoever played Lupin were so great.
Yeah.
I don't care that the age is wrong.
That's true.
One of those, like, it's something that should matter to me. It really doesn't because it's done so well.
Yeah.
It's like if they made Harry blonde, but he was stiff, perfect Harry. It's like, I don't care. I don't care.
The only reason it matters is because it's supposed to be that much more heartbreaking when you get to the later films and Harry looks the same age as his parents.
Yeah, no, that is totally fair.
Like, you know, in the book, there's a scene, that scene we were talking about where Harry goes to face Voldemort and he sees the ghost of his parents.
And they're like the same age.
And he has the realization that, like, not only has he always, like, looked like his dad as father and son, but right now looking at him, that you wouldn't be able to tell them apart, you know?
Yeah.
So the only reason it matters to me is because, like, that's supposed to be a huge part of the storyline, but alas, here we are.
Alas.
Still a good movie, still a good book, despite whatever flaws you can pick out of it.
Yeah. I think overall what I love most about this book is that it builds such an impressive world very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like even just in that first chapter about, you know, Vernon's life and then you meet Dumbledore and McGonagall.
Mr. and Mrs. Dursley lives on number 4 Privet Chat.
What a great opening. And it says something like not a lot of weird things used to happen to them or something like that.
Very normal.
Yeah.
They're perfectly happy. They're perfectly normal.
Shauna's reading the tattoo on her forearm, just the entire first chapter.
I don't have the Harry Potter tattoo yet.
Yet.
Anyway, this has been our first episode of
Literally Lit.
And maybe to be renamed to Harry Potter World.
TBD. No, there's already a Harry Potter podcast.
Okay, TBD. We'll determine things later.
I like Literally Lit.
Anyway, this is the first episode of Literally Lit. We discussed the very first Harry Potter book and some of the others. We will turn this into a running almost series. We're going to discuss the other books. Eventually, we might get to discussing some of the movies, depending on how that goes. And we will discuss other books also, I promise.
Yeah.
So if you have book suggestions, let us know. If not, thank you for listening until now.
All right. Thanks. Bye.